Welcome to the Bone Coach Show, dedicated to helping you understand all things related to diet, lifestyle, bone health, and how you can live and thrive with low bone density and osteoporosis. I'm your host, Kevin Ellis, certified health coach, health and wellness speaker, and above all else, your bone coach. After being diagnosed with osteoporosis in my early 30s, I transformed my health through diet and lifestyle and now help my clients and community members do the same through my online coaching practice, BoneCoach.com. Look, there are no quick and easy cures for low bone density, but the choices we make every single day can have a powerful impact on our bones, our health, and our general well-being. I'll share the research, interview the experts, and help you figure out how to get the conditions right in your body so you can better your bones through diet and lifestyle. Short disclaimer, I'm not a medical doctor, and this show should not be considered medical advice. Always consult with your healthcare team before making medical decisions and changes to your diet and lifestyle. With that being said, let's get on with the show.
We feel low energy. We feel the brain fog. We feel the weight distribution, right? All of a sudden, weight that was on our booty, you know, goes to our tummy. And so we're beginning to notice that these hormone changes are driving metabolic changes. And if we don't have a good metabolic foundation heading in to menopause, it can feel like the rug is just pulled from under us. And we start to see more deregulated blood sugar levels and increased fasting blood sugar. We start to see a fasting insulin, you know, out of an ideal range. And that lends not only to physiological inflammation, but also weight that we don't want to hold on to, and energy issues that are leaving us exhausted, frazzled, and brain fogged.
If you haven't done so already, especially if you're newly diagnosed with osteopenia or osteoporosis, or if your most recent bone density scan still showed more bone loss, go ahead and pause this episode and head over to bonecoach.com to sign up for your free 7-day osteoporosis kickstart guide. That's going to give you everything you need step by step by step over the next 7 days to get on the path to improvement and stronger bones. You won't want to miss that. So pause this right now. Head over to bonecoach.com and I'll be here as soon as you get back. Welcome to this episode of the Bone Coach Show. Joining us today to explore metabolic resilience in menopause and postmenopause is Dr. Marisa Snyder. She's a functional medicine practitioner, women's hormone expert, and the author of 8 books. The newest book, The Essential Oils Menopause Solution, focuses on solutions for women in perimenopause and menopause. And the number one national best-selling book, The Essential Oils Hormone Solution, focuses on balancing women's hormones naturally. For the past 15 years, she has lectured at wellness centers, conferences, and corporations on hormone health, metabolic health, nutrition, and detoxification. She has been featured on Dr. Oz, Oprah Magazine, Fox News Health, MindBodyGreen, and many publications. Dr. Marisa is also the host of the top-rated Energized podcast, with over 11 million downloads, designed to empower women to become the CEO of their health. You can check out her website at drmarisa.com for women's hormones tips, including recipes and supplementation. Dr. Marisa, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Ooh, Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. I'm looking forward to the conversation. And let's start with your journey, too, and how you got into this field and started working with women and helping empower them to become the CEO of their own health.
Thanks for asking. Yeah, I, you know, like so many women, I started having, you know, hormone issues probably as early as a teenager, but really in my mid to late 20s, I was struggling with stubborn weight. I was struggling with severe chronic fatigue issues. And I every day was a struggle, every single day, up until a point where I remember waking up one day and I literally couldn't lift myself out of bed. I was so exhausted. And still I had a patient load of women and who were in midlife who I was trying to get to. And what I realized, you know, kind of looking back, you know, one of the things that wasn't looked at for me was that I was struggling not only with mitochondrial dysfunction, obviously I couldn't get out of bed in the morning at a young age, but also insulin resistance. I was chasing blood sugar roller coasters. I was waking up, probably putting more sugar in my coffee than anyone should. And by 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, literally on the dot every single day, even as far back as high school, I was drinking a coffee in the afternoon and typically a Kind bar or a York peppermint patty or something to just get me through the rest of the day. And, you know, even at this particular age of my demographic back then, it wasn't something we were looking at. You know, I couldn't even get a doctor to look at a fasting blood sugar number, but realized kind of looking back that insulin resistance was a major issue for me. And that was driving a lot of my issues. And that predicated a lot of the other hormone issues I was dealing with as well. And so as I've looked at a lot of my own patients and kind of the journey that so many women I kind of, you know, have taken care of over the years, it's kind of one of the underlying root causes that we tend to miss, having that stable blood sugar level, having that metabolic resilience that can lend to a lot of other issues down the road.
Now, you mentioned earlier on in life, you had some things that had taken place that maybe affected your health down the road too. Like for the women that are listening that have kids, that have grandkids, are there things they should be thinking about or educating their kids about right now, or be on the lookout for, at least when they're younger, before they even get to the point where they're in, you know, menopause, postmenopause, so on and so forth?
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking about metabolic resilience, you know, I remember interviewing Dr. Perlmutter a couple of years back, and I was literally on my menopause summit, and we were talking about neurodegeneration and what kind of was a big driver of that. And his findings based on everything he looked at was metabolic dysfunction. And so I asked, you know, I'm like, well, you know, a lot of the women who are listening right now are in their 50s, but when is the defining moment, the time where it should really be on our radar? And I was thinking he was going to say, you know, late 20s, early 30s, like that's the tipping point of where we really need to be paying attention to our metabolic health. But he actually surprised me. And he was like, in utero. In utero is the time where your metabolic health is on the line. And that's at a time where we don't have we're not making decisions. It's our mama that's making those decisions. And so if women are listening, you know, grandmas or maybe potential mamas out there, you know, a lot of what we're doing to get pregnant when we are pregnant postpartum is setting the tone for our children's metabolic health. And, you know, a lot of us have been told like during pregnancy, we can kind of eat whatever we want. We can kind of do whatever we want. And that is simply not true. It is what we see is that when women are struggling with gestational diabetes when they're pregnant, our children have a 33% higher rate of insulin resistance and prediabetes by the time they're an adult. And so that's really where we need to be thinking about our metabolic health is even before we're born. But obviously, there's a lot that we can be doing as, you know, grandparents and parents when it comes to, you know, setting our children's metabolic health and their mitochondrial health up for success. Currently, right now, we know that, you know, the percentage of teenagers being diagnosed with prediabetes is 33%. And so we used to call, or what is termed adult onset diabetes, type 2 diabetes, really isn't appropriate anymore, because the amount of children that are being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes has basically requiring the change of that that condition.
And this is so important. I mean, if you think about also our bone structure too, 90% of that bone mass we're putting on by the time you turn age 18. So if we've got a third of the population of, you know, teenagers being diagnosed with prediabetes, those blood sugar levels, that's going to impact your bone health too, and kidney function potentially longer term also. So definitely something to be aware of when you're younger and helping build healthy habits in those kids. You set the example for them too. And I think that's really important. And also if you are a grandparent, finding ways to help. Do you have any suggestions for grandparents maybe to help guide a daughter or a daughter-in-law? Because I know that can be a touchy subject where they see a situation where they want to help, but it may be a little bit challenging for them to give their feedback.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that 70%, I think this is a new stat that just came out, 70% of our children's diets are ultra-processed foods. And it was last year it was 16.5%, but we looked at it again in meta-analysis and it's now up to 70%. And I believe it's about 55% for adults. And so really, I mean, focusing on as much real food as possible that doesn't come in plastic, that doesn't come in packaging is really the name of the game. And so making, you know, offering to make healthy lunches and healthy breakfasts and, you know, really making as much food at home as possible, even desserts. You know, we make muffins from scratch at my house. I have a three-year-old at the age of 44. So I'm in perimenopause and I just heard him a second ago. I think my husband didn't shut the door to my office, but I heard my son come in the door bounding in for lunch, which for him is going to be chicken today. It's going to be pesto. It's going to be, we roasted some potatoes last night. We've got blueberries for him. So that's what lunch is going to look like for Kingston. And everything was made from scratch. And so I would say if cooking is your jam and you're down to help cook, help, you know, bring over meals, healthy snacks, have healthy snacks in your house as well, that are not highly processed and packaged. I get that we live in a world of convenience. I get that kids love snacks. I believe me. Okay. I'm living in that world right this second. But the more that we are offering these whole foods, I know it's more time, but you know, I think with grandparents, we have a little bit of bandwidth to spend a little bit more of that time. And I think one of the most important things that we can do with our children is really nourishing their bodies to really support their metabolic health and to support their brain health and support their microbiome. It's one of the best ways we can really love them up. And then also being fully present with them and loving them. You know, that's the game of the game. And making sure that they're outside. You know, my son goes to a Scandinavian forest school. He is outdoors the entire time he's at school. And I want him in the sunlight. You know, I think about our mitochondria as really little plants. You know, they need to be charged up with the sun. They need to be, you know, outside in nature. That, you know, that's a really easy hormetic, you know, strategy for helping to support our energy levels. And so for me, sending my son to a outdoor preschool was a no-brainer because I want him to be getting as much sunlight. He just came back from a 2-hour, you know, park expedition just a second ago. And so I think those are the things that are really going to move the needle when it comes to loving up on that next generation.
I love that. And just to add on that one more before we go to the next thing that I'd love to talk about is that if you are the person in your kid's life and you're trying to prepare meals and things like that for them, it doesn't have to be too different from what you're making for yourself also. And you can prepare these things ahead of time. So the more prepared you are in advance, let's say a Sunday or something like that, the better off you're going to be when you get later in the week and you may not have as much time or so prepare ahead of time, plan some healthy meals ahead of time. They don't necessarily have to be just dedicated to one person. You can make them for the whole family too. So
yes,
let's go to for now, present day, the women that are actually still feeling tired, they're hungry, they're moody. They feel like they can't pay attention or focus on things, or maybe they have just fatigue. What are some of the driving and contributing factors to that around perimenopause, menopause, and then even into postmenopause?
Absolutely. Well, and this is a little bit controversial, but I'm just going to say it because the more that we normalize perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, the more that we're able to optimize women's health. We know that once women turn 50 years old, their rate of cardiovascular disease and neurodegenerative disease just bypasses men. And let me tell you, it is not for a lack of trying, Kevin. Okay. You go outside and women are the ones walking. You go to the gym, women are the ones at the gym. Like they are the ones giving supplement protocols to everyone in the house. You know, they're the ones who are obviously, you know, creating, you know, a lot of the meal plans. You're just going to own it. Women are really, I find, pretty devoted to their health and well-being. And, you know, what we are learning is that perimenopause, which is that transition into menopause, and then, you know, menopause is really just defined as finally the day where you haven't had a period for 12 consecutive months, you're there, celebrate, have a party, have a menopause party. And note that from that day moving forward, you're in postmenopause. And what we know is that there is nothing healthy about menopause. And what I mean by that is that perimenopause to menopause transition is a default inflammatory state. because of the declining reproductive chemical messengers that are happening. When we lose our estradiol, when estradiol flatlines, when progesterone flatlines, when testosterone basically flatlines, growth hormone, you know, hits the wall, we see increase in insulin resistance. We see an increase in neurodegenerative inflammation. We see an increase in lipid profiles going up, talking about total cholesterol, LDLs, triglycerides. It's a inflammatory state. And there are also some really incredible positives, like, you know, self-agency and not caring about what people think anymore and really owning your truth. But in terms of physiological organ shifts and changes, our mitochondria just take a big hit, and we feel it. We feel low energy. We feel the brain fog. We feel the weight distribution, right? All of a sudden, you know, weight that was on our booty, you know, goes to our tummy. And so we're beginning to notice that these hormone changes are driving metabolic changes. And if we don't have a good metabolic foundation heading in to menopause, it can feel like the rug is just pulled from under us. And we start to see more deregulated blood sugar levels and increased fasting blood sugar. We start to see a fasting insulin, you know, out of an ideal range. And we start to see our triglycerides and lipids creeping up. And that lends not only to physiological inflammation, but also weight that we don't want to hold on to, and energy issues that are leaving us exhausted, frazzled, and brain fogged.
Where do you like to see each of those levels at? You know, you just walked through some different markers there. Where do you like to see those at?
Absolutely. When we look at metabolic dysfunction, there are a couple different markers we're looking at. For one, our inches around our waist. I want to see the inches around your waist. So the diameter of your waist, I want it to be under half of your height. We normally say 35 inches for women. So you want to be under 35 inches, unless you're short. Like, I'm short. That's not going to cut it for me. I need to be under 35 inches for sure. But when we see anything creeping over 35 inches, that's a marker of metabolic dysfunction. Fasting blood sugar, they will say 100 milligrams per deciliter, because a fasting blood sugar of 100 milligrams per deciliter is technically the starting point of prediabetes. But I will tell you that if you are there, there are definitely some major concerns. So I want to see 90 milligrams per deciliter or lower. If you're starting to creep towards 90 milligrams per deciliter, that should be a warning sign. Now, is your doctor going to say, oh, you're good probably until you get closer to 100? Unfortunately, yes. But what we know is that we don't need to be diagnosed with type 2 diabetes or end-stage prediabetes to have a greater precursor for cardiovascular incident. And we know that the number one root cause or number one killer of women is cardiovascular disease, so ischemic heart attacks or stroke. And so I don't want to see numbers above 90 milligrams per deciliter. With triglycerides, again, we're looking at 150 milligrams per deciliter. I don't ever want to see numbers around 150 milligrams per deciliter. I want to see it under 100. And then with fasting insulin, which again, you're going to have to really kind of beg for it, or maybe have to pay out of pocket. But I personally don't want to see a fasting insulin score of anything above a 5. If you're creeping past a 10, that is system-wide insulin resistance, lending to a lot of these other numbers you're going to see. And then when it comes to, so high blood pressure is another area that we start to see creep up very quickly after we see the decline in estradiol in menopause. And so usually it's going to be, you know, we don't want to see 130 over 80, but ideally we want to keep it closer to 120 over 70. So looking at these numbers every single year in an annual exam, I think is very critical, so that you know where you are. And if you have three out of these five out of range, that is the definition of metabolic dysfunction. And 88% of women, about 90% of women, by the time they are 45 years old, have at least one or more of these markers out of range.
Interesting. That's super helpful, I'm sure, for the people listening. And what about continuous blood glucose monitoring devices? What are your thoughts on those?
I love them. I'm obsessed. Because a lot of us don't, and again, when it comes to blood sugar and blood sugar variability, which again is driving, you know, our insulin response, it is going to be individualized, you know, it's going to be a lot of different factors that impact it. You know, obviously, you know, hormones are going to have an impact, the amount of stress we're dealing with, you know, what we eat in the morning is going to set the tone, but also our sleep or lack thereof. And so there will be a lot of different things that will influence our blood sugar variability. And what that means is kind of how it's ebbing and flowing throughout the day. And really the name of the game is to keep it as steady and straight, like straightening out that glucose curve. You know, when you're looking at a CGM, when you're measuring it, so it's measuring the interstitial fluid kind of right here in the arm, that's where you would put it. Or if you've got a Dexcom 6, it's going to be kind of near the stomach area. And you just read it. You have an app that can read that those numbers, and you can basically check those numbers 1,000 times a day. you can look at them a lot. And so you can see, you know, what your fasting blood sugar is when you wake up in the morning. I always recommend people, if they're looking at a CGM or using one. And I recommend if there was a Christmas gift or a birthday gift or a Valentine's Day gift or I don't know, whatever holiday you want to give to yourself, if there was something to gift yourself, I would highly recommend investing in a month CGM, because there's so much that you can learn about your body and your blood sugar that will pretty much blow your mind. You know, even looking at, does espresso or just, you know, regular coffee without any food, does that have a blood sugar response in your body? You know, what does breakfast do? What's your fasting blood sugar in the morning when you first wake up? You know, looking at all these things, looking at the variability, and what you'll find, I think everybody and anyone who's ever worn one has been pretty surprised by the types of foods that they're eating, you know, what time of the day that they're eating, how that has a profound impact on their blood sugar. And even if, and I know a lot of your women are not cycling anymore, but for women who are cycling, you know, even during their cycle, what does that look like? You know, the follicular phase looks very different. We're way more insulin sensitive in the follicular phase than we are in that luteal phase. You know, those couple of days leading up to your period, you're going to notice your blood sugar is just higher than normal. And, you know, you look at a grape and it just soars into, you know, the pre-diabetic, diabetic range. And so I'm a big fan of CGMs, especially if deregulated blood sugar is one of the biggest drivers of metabolic dysfunction. And it's an issue that so many of us are dealing with, but it's silent. You know, it's very much under the radar. Not a lot of us really know, you know, what it feels to have fluctuating blood sugar levels all the time, because some of us are constantly on the blood sugar roller coaster. Life is just fluctuating blood sugar issues, and we just have no idea it's happening.
And do you get to a point where it's like you eat a food, you see the response to that food, and you can kind of just make a note and check it and say, okay, I know my body's response to this food now. Versus maybe some people in the past have had eating disorders or things like that. And now, you know, if they're looking after every single bite of food or over and over and over again, I don't know if there could be any issues with that potentially.
You know, that's a great question. And that has been brought up, obviously, when people have discussed kind of the concerns around a continuous glucose monitor, those who, you know, have eating disorders, who become a little bit, you know, who are already looking so closely at what they're eating, could that drive more of that disorder? And that's absolutely possible. I still feel like that kind of information on a physiological level, knowing how your body responds drastically to a specific food, is important information. But yeah, I mean, I don't see a lot of people, you know, weaponizing but like using CGMs in a way that isn't going to be helpful for them. And for the majority of people, I mean, we're talking about, again, 90% of women mid-40s we're seeing major blood sugar deregulation. You know, I for me, having access to a CGM, there's a much greater good than I'm concerned about people using it in a way that isn't going to be helpful for their bodies.
Yeah, I would agree. And the reason I asked that too, by the way, is that there are people in our community where maybe when they were younger, they had an eating disorder or something like that and they didn't reach peak bone mass. And that's something from their past that affected their bone health. So that's one of the reasons why I brought that up. Do you have a specific, before we move on to the next thing, do you have a specific continuous glucose monitor that you like a brand, or a couple brands?
There's only two brands out there. There's Abbott and there is the Dexcom. And I would say type 1 diabetics often are using the more highly sensitive Dexcom, but it's here's the thing. It requires a prescription here in the US. And unfortunately for most providers, unless you have type 1 diabetes, even type 2 diabetics, I find get rejected wearing it to get a CGM. Type 1s are usually the only ones that are going to be granted prescription access. And so that means you have to go through other companies, through private companies. And the two private companies that I'm most familiar with that I've used their CGM, and it's always been the Abbott Libre CGM that I've used. Then that's the one that goes on the arm. And I've used the Dexcom 6 before. I've used the Dexcom technology as well. Only because levels. So the company Levels and the company Nutrisense. Now between the two, Nutrisense gives you some more wiggle room and flexibility. they're a little less stringent in terms of your metabolic score and really going into the nitty gritty of all the metabolic details. But I think when it comes to a really comprehensive approach to metabolic health, Levels nails it. And so I personally prefer Levels, but if it's someone you just want a little bit more wiggle room, you want a little bit more laxity around your blood sugar numbers, Nutrisense is going to be the company that I'd recommend for that.
That was super helpful. Thanks for sharing that. And then what can we do in the morning to balance our blood sugar levels?
Yeah, I think a lot of us don't realize that how we eat in the morning really sets the tone for the rest of the day. And for women in menopause, one of the things that I've noticed that's really kind of come to awareness is that we're losing our muscle mass. We know sarcopenia is very much a concern, osteoporosis too as well, and we're not getting enough protein. So we're not really setting ourselves up for protein synthesis. And so in the morning, I'm a big fan of a metabolically healthy breakfast that is protein focused. I think a minimum of 30 grams of protein to kick off the day is super critical because we've been, you know, most of us are doing at least a 12-hour circadian fast. And I think, you know, when it comes to managing blood sugar levels and helping to support insulin resistance without overtaxing our stress response system and our thyroid, that a 12-hour fast is very appropriate, very manageable. You know, you stop eating at 6 because again, we become more insulin resistant at night. So I, from wearing a CGM for 2 years on and off, I have found that eating dinner after 7:30 is not working for me because we're not meant to. Honestly, we should be asleep by 7:30 if we're really following our circadian rhythm. And so we eat dinner with our son at around 5:30 to 6. We're done eating by 6. And my blood sugar loves that. My blood sugar is so happy with me. I try to stay within a narrow window of 70 milligrams per deciliter on the lower end and 110 milligrams per deciliter on the upper end. And so when I set my CGM kind of parameters to that, and I don't spike over 110 milligrams per deciliter, even 2 hours postprandial, so 2 hours post-meal blood glucose. And so, but if I start to seep into like past 7 p.m., I'll start to see that number creep. And mind you, that is a very optimal and ideal blood sugar parameter. But I feel like, I mean, it's my metabolism. And I really want to thrive. I'm a 44-year-old woman with a 3-year-old child. Like I need to be around for a minute. So I know that my blood sugar metabolism really need to be on point. And so I end dinner at 6. That means I am in the clear at 6 a.m. We usually don't eat until 8. So I'm usually between a 12 and 14-hour fast. But I break that fast with protein, fiber, and healthy fats. I do not put sugar in my coffee. I put cinnamon in my coffee. And it's, again, protein forward. So my recommendation is cut the sugar. Cut the sugar. Creamers, sweeteners, I know it may only say it's only 3 grams of sugar in like a 2 tablespoons or whatever, but it adds up. And let me tell you, if you're consuming that in your coffee in a fasted state, there is nothing to stop it. It is I don't care if it's only 2 grams of sugar in the bloodstream through the gut, it is going to hit you hard and it's going to spike your blood sugar. And that's the concern. You know, could you get away with that after you had the big protein breakfast and you could have, you know, what we call a treat in my house? That would be a treat. Okay. You put a little sugar sweetener, you know, in your coffee. That's a treat in my house. And so, but if you do that out the gate, it's 100% going to probably spike your blood sugar. And you would know most if you had that continuous glucose monitor to monitor. But so cinnamon in your coffee or cinnamon in your tea, that helps with blood sugar variability. And test it. I mean, if you can, test if you can do coffee standalone, or do you need to do coffee with a meal? Because even caffeine can drive that cortisol response that will can drive, that co-regulates the insulin response as well. So these are things that are important to know. So for me, it's usually it's an omelet or it's a protein shake. I try to aim for 40 because I really want to I really want to optimize that protein synthesis, especially because I have to at this point actively work to keep my muscle mass. I mean, it is just the real deal. And the older I get, the harder it's going to be. So the more that I can set myself up for success, I then make sure that I'm getting a decent amount of fiber, whether it's veggies or it's chia seeds, and then some healthy fats like some avocado or a little bit of almond butter, depending on what it is. And then, you know, that really is going to set you up for success. It's going to keep your blood sugar stable and it's going to keep you fuller longer. Also note that we are more thermogenic, in a more thermogenic state in the morning. And so, you know, we are really burning that off. We're using that as fuel versus storing it as fat.
I love that. I love that you said protein rich food, because a lot of people, even when I was growing up, I still remember this. My mother, she would always start the day with like a Danish or, you know, a croissant, or, and a lot of people start with some carbohydrate rich pastry or something like that. But you need to get protein in that first meal of the day. And just remember, your muscles are made of protein, of amino acids. You need those amino acids. Your bones are 50% protein by volume. So you have to have that for your bones too. And I thank you so much for the recommendation. And then also not eating too late in the evenings too, stopping that. So that way you can also have a good blood sugar response to it, but also can make sure that you can digest the food a little bit before you go to bed.
Yeah, sleep. Gosh, I mean, what postmenopausal woman isn't begging for a decent night's sleep? And what if it's that snack? What if it's that little, you know, if I look at wine, I mean, I don't drink anymore, but if there's a bottle in my house and I see it, it catches my eye, and my sleep is out the door that night, you know? So it doesn't take a lot to deregulate our circadian rhythm, to mess with our sleep. And I promise you, a snack after 8 p.m., you know, you cross that 3-hour window threshold and your blood sugar and your digestive system, you know, that it's such an energetic process to have to run our metabolic system before bed. And it can wreck everything. So do your best to, you know, have that eating window end on the earlier side. Not only is it going to protect your metabolic health, but it's going to protect your sleep, your brain. There's so many benefits to ending dinner on the earlier side and in not eating again until the next morning.
I'd love to get your perspective on bioidentical hormone replacement therapy too, you know, perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause. Would love to hear that.
I love it. I'm on it. I'm on bioidentical progesterone. I'm actually about to get on bioidentical estradiol, given the symptoms I'm dealing with. I have a mammogram this weekend, just making sure I'm just checking all the boxes before I get on an estradiol patch. But I'm very clear that the perimenopausal transition is a time of, as I mentioned, systemic inflammation. And if you're dealing with symptoms, even if your metabolic health is dialed, my numbers, I mean, honestly, I should have them in a frame, my metabolic numbers. They are so sexy. Okay. They're so optimized. I'm so proud of my ApoB, my fasting insulin is a 2. I mean, I just, all of my numbers, my triglycerides are a 40. It's just my fasting blood sugar is a 72. And so, you know, it's hormones that are shifting for me and shifting big. And I don't know if it's because I had my son at 41 that I kind of sped up the process. You know, my mom's perimenopausal journey was, it was like watching a horror show. You know, I wouldn't have wished that on anyone. And so I kind of knew it was coming, but I felt like I was doing so much of the right things. But at the end of the day, you know, there are around 40 different symptoms during that perimenopause into menopause journey, and they are 100% related to the loss and decline of these very critical, but you know, very critical hormone chemical messengers. We know that estradiol and progesterone has receptor sites on every single organ system in the body, and so, you know, and here's the thing: when you're testing for something like this, you know, it's a snapshot in time, and so I think women really need to listen to their bodies and listen to their symptoms. And so for me, you know, being at this age, my symptoms are screaming loud enough that I'm just like, I deserve a top off. Mama deserves a little top off. And so I'm a big fan of bioidentical hormones. I feel like we've done women a massive disservice, you know, especially when it comes to mental health issues, sleep issues, cardiovascular, vasomotor issues like hot flashes and night sweats, and even, you know, bone rebuilding. You know, the three major areas that put us at great risk for all-cause mortality is going to be fractures due to osteoporosis, because, you know, our life expectancy after that hip replacement is not looking good, is going to be cardiovascular incidents, so stroke and heart attack, and it's going to be dementia. And so those are the reason why these precipitously get out of control after the age of 50 and postmenopause, or, you know, depending on where you land, natural menopause is between 45 and 55 years old. So wherever you land in that spectrum, it's due to a loss of estradiol. Let's just call it. It's, you know, and yes, you need to have good metabolic health as a foundation. And there's a lot of things that we can do to mitigate this. But at the end of the day, we really do need those hormones. They are optimizers. Now, do they work best when our metabolic health is optimized, when our microbiome is working well, when we have stress reduction strategies, where we have good, strong bones and muscles? Yes. But at the end of the day, only 4% of women in menopause are actually on bioidentical hormones. And that just breaks my heart. And so I'm hoping that by having conversations like this, the narrative changes, the way that we approach women's health changes, because until we normalize menopause and postmenopause and really own the fact that it's hormone disruption, and it is hormone, you know, a lack of the hormones that we need to function, women are not going to thrive in this demographic.
Let's talk about your book. You've got a new book out, right? Which is The Essential Oil Menopause Solution. I'd love for you to talk about that for a minute.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, again, I think that this particular transition and menopause, postmenopause, we deserve all the tools in the toolbox. We deserve all of it. And so a part of this book is really looking at the root causes for why we are struggling with some of those symptoms. Obviously, one of the big ones that I mentioned is, you know, the hormones that were supporting us for decades, they're not there anymore. So we get to acknowledge that. Two, our gut health, our stress response system. You know, we live in the 21st century. It's stressful. Mom, you know, a lot of women are caregiving for their families, have careers. There's just a lot of balls in the air. We have to acknowledge that. Sometimes symptoms can just feel so unmanageable. And so not only working with a great team of practitioners, but having rituals and habits at your beck and call. And so one of the ways that I've really loved to implement that for women in at all ages, but particularly in menopause, is having tools like supplementation and essential oils to just support their sleep habits, support their stress habits, or lack of support their stress response system so that it's not a situation for them, support blood sugar regulation. And so that's a lot of what this book is about, is just what are all the tools that we have access to that we can use in the comfort of our own home that can help move the needle in the right direction. And so that is what this book offers, not only supplementation, oils, habits, a whole program in the book, but it's really dialed around your metabolic health and, you know, really helping to support the hormones that you do have in menopause.
I love that. I know I have my favorite essential oils. What's your favorite essential oil?
So I am obsessed. I love peppermint. Mm-hmm. Peppermint's a favorite. We use a lot of lavender in the house. It's a big one for me. But I, one of the reasons why I'm kind of needing, I know I need estradiol is I'm struggling with migraines. I have one today. And so I'm a doTERRA girl. And so I'm obsessed with the deep blue. I put it, I slathered myself with it. And it really helps to mitigate the, you know, the migraine pain while I'm doing interviews like that. So I'm really sharp. So those are some of my favorites. How about you?
Well, I actually going to say peppermint for me in the mornings. I love it. I actually rub it in my hands a little bit, take a, and then I rub it over the top of my head. Usually I'll do that after I get out of like a cold shower or an ice bath or something too, when I'm already cold, but I love doing that. I love frankincense. It's one of my absolute favorite ones. And then lavender in the evenings before bed. So those are my favorites.
Yeah. We lather up our sun. I love eucalyptus, especially in the shower. It just wakens up the senses. And I'm a big fan of citrus oils. Like, you want a little energizer bunny, a combination of citrus and peppermint are just perfect to just wake you up and kind of, I think of it like happy energy. It's just joyful. It's kind of effervescent. It feels really good. And I think that's really what I came back to is we deserve to feel good. And that's what a lot of oils can do for you, is they can help you feel good even at a time where you may not be feeling so hot.
You just take a couple drops in the shower of eucalyptus?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Really? Okay. Well, I'm gonna test that one out. I actually have a eucalyptus, but okay. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Maurice. I am so glad that you came and shared your knowledge and expertise with our audience. I know I learned quite a bit, and I'm sure our audience did as well. And I would love for them to know where they can find you and your work. And we'll link to that in the show notes.
Absolutely. Well, the podcast as well. And I know I just had you on, so you guys can go check out that episode. It was just a couple weeks ago. And then I do have a little guide. I know that like blood sugar and getting off that blood sugar roller coaster is so critical. So I do have my go-to 5 blood sugar hacks that are so easy to implement. We talked about a couple today, but there's even more. And implementing these can change the game in your metabolic health and energy levels and get you off that blood sugar roller coaster.
Love that. Well, so for everybody listening, you can find all the resources, show notes, everything mentioned here today over at bonecoach.com. I will link to all the resources in the show notes. I want to thank you again so much for your time. We'll see you in the next episode. Hope you found this episode of the Bone Coach Show helpful. You can find all the resources, show notes, everything mentioned over at bonecoach.com. If you enjoyed this episode and found it helpful, be sure to share it with someone you love, a friend, family member, even a group of people. And also be sure to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode that can help you improve your bones, your health, and your future. One last reminder, if you haven't done so already, head over to bonecoach.com. for more great resources to help you get on the path to stronger bones and an active future. I'm your Bone Coach, Kevin Ellis. I'll see you in the next episode.